Peter at his very best. We saw him in Shanghai. Those reflexes that are incredible, like a mongoose on amphetamine.
Murray wins it all. He's champion of the Barclays ATP World Tour Finals.
Has done it. Joe Konta. It is confirmed. Joe Konta with the biggest title of her career at the Miami Open and now also at a new career high.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious. That ball was on the line. Shaw flew up.
This is URN Sport.
Hello and welcome to the first episode of Strawberries and Cream in 2019. I'm Matt, I'm joined here by Benji, Alex and Naomi, and we're going to be talking about all things tennis, and especially the Australian Open today, which has just concluded. So first of all, we're going to start off with the men's singles draw, where of course Novak Djokovic triumphs over Nadal in a one-sided final. Benji, you're a huge Nadal fan. I suspect, you know, looking at Nadal's form in that tournament, you know, you must have thought he was destined for the title. Were you surprised with the result?
To be honest, like, Nadal, he didn't drop a set until the Djokovic match. Like, he ate past TFO and Tsitsipas, which I didn't expect him to. I expected him to lose a set to Tsitsipas. But I did expect Djokovic to win, but only because he's on really good form. But, like, I thought it was quite impressive for Nadal still, because he hadn't played a tournament since the US Open, I think. And he'd obviously gone out injured against Del Potro in the US Open semi-final. So for Nadal to come back, obviously the final wasn't what I wanted, because it was a thrashing. I didn't expect that. I expected Nadal maybe to take a set, but yeah, I still think he had a very good tournament, and hopefully he can come back strong in Roland Garros.
Yeah, absolutely. I think all of us were surprised, as you said there, considering that Nadal looked so imperious throughout the tournament and didn't drop a set. And Alex, Djokovic had struggled at points in the Australian Open, hadn't he? He dropped a few sets along the way. Were you perhaps also surprised by the result in the final?
Yeah, I thought the final would be a lot more complicated. I know Djokovic did well in the semi-final against, what was it, Lucas Poole?
Lucas Pouille,
yeah. Like, but other than that, obviously the magical 2012 Australian Open final was between Djokovic and Nadal, and that was the last time they met in Australia. So I think a lot of people were expecting a similar kind of 4 or 5 hour epic.
I wasn't.
So I thought it might go to five sets. I believe Djokovic would win, but I think it could have been like Djokovic easing through the first two sets, Nadal fighting back, and then Djokovic getting the winning set or something. What I wasn't expecting was Djokovic perhaps playing one of the best ever games of his career, because Nadal, yeah, made Tsitsipas, who was very impressive against Federer, look almost completely juvenile. And yeah, I thought Djokovic would win, but I was surprised in the manner that he'd won. So
yeah, just touching upon that Tsitsipas game there, Naomi, obviously Federer has had a bit of resurgence in the last few years, but appeared to come unstuck against Tsitsipas, a sort of parallel of him beating Pete Sampras in 2001 at Wimbledon, if you will. Do you think that Federer's career is finally starting to get towards its final moments?
I definitely think that after that match, for me anyway, Federer didn't look like his normal self, and I think that potentially it could be the end. It's definitely coming near the end of his career now, well, at the highest level anyway. When he eventually retires, it could still be a few more years, but he's definitely going to start dropping in the rankings. And I think it's interesting to see, because Tsitsipas was the winner of the Next Gen tournament, and he's young, and so Tsitsipas could be one to watch in the future, as well as Federer dropping. Tsitsipas could definitely be competing more with the likes of Nadal and Djokovic as well.
Interesting you mentioned the next generation there. Obviously, at points over the last few years, people have been trying to line up different players to come through and take the title. At one point, it was the likes of Nishikori, Raonic and Dimitrov that were being lined up as sort of the up-and-coming. They haven't quite capitalised on that. Obviously, Nishikori and Raonic have been to Grand Slam finals, but they've not taken that final step, and nobody's had the consistency. I think Tsitsipas and TFO were the two players who sort of established themselves a bit more after this Australian Open. Which out of those two would you guys look at and think they've got more potential for a good career?
Well, I think both of them looked really great, and it was the unforced errors of that they have to improve on. I think Tsitsipas to knock out Federer, reminiscent of when Federer knocked out Sampras as a very young player. I think, honestly, Tsitsipas getting to a semi-final at 20 years old, magnificent achievement, and TFO as well in the quarter-final. And they came up against Nadal and lost, but it's a learning curve. And, yeah, I think both of them can do very well.
Yeah, I agree with Benji. I think probably Tsitsipas, out of this kind of new generation of TFOs, Zverev, Tsitsipas, Shapovalov maybe, I think Tsitsipas looks the most impressive because he's played Federer a couple of times before that. I believe he won one, if not, as a very good performance. I saw highlights of it and just he looks so experienced for his age. Like, players like Shapovalov look impressive, but then they make, like, there's a few cases when I think Shapovalov played someone like Nadal and just sort of kept volleying from way back in the court and it was just a very immature move. Obviously that can be improved with time, but I'll be controversial. I think I still believe in Nick Kyrgios, and I still believe hear me out, because I still believe he can come good, because on his day, one of the most captivating players to watch with his trick shots and just unbelievable power, but psychologically there's something not there. But I would just love to, I wouldn't love to see him win because of his temperament, but I think he could do something.
Yeah, I do sort of agree with the Kyrgios thing. His serve is magnificent, but yeah, he's a very immature player, and when things don't go his way, it goes from bad to worse. So I don't know whether he has the mentality to win overall.
I'm just agreeing with what you're saying, Benji. I think Kyrgios has definitely got the ability, but he's not consistent enough, and he will get annoyed, and it will go from really, really great to completely rubbish, and he'll be out just like that. So I don't think he can maintain the ability. But with Tsitsipas, I think he's a more of an all-round player, and he's definitely going to have more of a confidence getting to the semi-final and beating Federer in a Grand Slam. And he lost to Nadal, so he's got nothing to lose. Like, he's not going to be disappointed that much by losing to a great, great player like Nadal is.
Just touching on that Kyrgios theme for a moment there, I actually agree with Alex. I think in terms of talent, that Kyrgios has the talent to beat anyone, but it's obviously lacking in the mentality. Here's a little rogue suggestion. So, obviously, Andy Murray is apparently going towards the end of his career. What would you make of Andy Murray coaching Nick Kyrgios?
I think that would be quite shocking, but yeah, I'd want to see that if Murray's up for that. Yeah, I think Kyrgios could improve definitely, but in terms of temperament, I don't think Murray would help him with that.
I disagree with that, because Murray 10 years ago again had a few temperament issues. He was immature, he lashed out on the court, he clashed with players, he didn't appeal to the fans, he was quite unpopular, and from then on, like, he's ending his career a hugely popular, not only tennis player but also like TV star in a way, and he has these moments where he's actually hilarious. If you go on his Instagram, he's just great fun, to be honest. So like, if he could coach some of that kind of philosophy of self-improvement into Kyrgios, plus obviously Murray's own technical ability, he could potentially improve Kyrgios not only as a tennis player, but also as a tennis guy, which is a huge part of tennis. That was poorly worded, but yeah.
Yeah, okay, I'll give Murray the good fun thing. So when they asked the players at Wimbledon, how do you eat your strawberries? He said, with my fingers instead of whipped cream.
Yeah. I agree with what you're both saying, but I agree again that Murray has improved over the last few years. You can see how he doesn't get as angry anymore. He's much better, and he's got many more fans. I didn't used to like him at the start, and then I grew to like him, and it's a shame what's happening now, but it would be interesting if he were to coach Kyrgios, because I don't like Kyrgios, but I like Murray, so I don't know how I'd feel about that one.
The key with Kyrgios, it's okay to, in a way, it's okay to get angry on the court, because it can, in some ways, make you play better, and you can utilise it effectively. The main problem with Kyrgios is when he throws points out of anger and throws points, because that's not only letting down the fans, that's letting down himself. It's just wasting everyone's time. So the key is, you know, he can utilise that anger and that passion, but in the same way sort of Djokovic does. But the thing he has to eradicate is the fact that he loses points deliberately, because that's very unsportsmanlike.
It's not just his anger as well. I think because he knows how good his ability is, I don't think he puts in as much effort as he can, and I think he needs to train more and just have 100% attention on the tennis and not another side of things, and that will help him to be stronger in the future.
It certainly is an interesting one. It's all hypotheticals at the moment. And talking of more hypotheticals, potentially, if we look to the year ahead of men's tennis, obviously Djokovic has really laid down a mark with his performance at the Australian Open. Currently on 15 Grand Slams, Nadal on 17, Federer on 20. Can Djokovic catch Federer and Nadal within the next couple of years in terms of Grand Slams?
I think he can certainly catch them, but Nadal being the best at Roland Garros, I personally, I'm biased, I want Nadal to overtake Federer and be the best. Like, I really think he's the best, but still. Yeah, Djokovic, in this moment of time, like, Nadal not being that great on grass, Federer, I do believe he is coming towards the end of his career, and those Grand Slams could go to Djokovic, and he still has a good few years left, and he could certainly get over 20. But if the French Open in the next Grand Slam, I think that'll be an interesting one in terms of the decision for this question. Basically, if Nadal does win it, I do think it'll be harder for Djokovic to break this record. But I'm hoping Nadal does it ultimately.
I agree. I'm a massive Nadal fan too, and I would love Nadal to overtake Federer. And I am confident he's going to get at least one or two more Roland Garroses. He's just so good on clay, and if he can improve, because now he's changed his game and his serve is a lot better. He was close in the Australian Open, so I don't see why, if he plays like that in the US Open on a hard court, then he's got a very good chance of winning other Grand Slams as well as the French Open. And I think Federer's close. I don't know if he will win another Grand Slam, because his career, I think, personally, is coming to a close. And if there's other players coming through, like Tsitsipas and Tiafoe, who knows what could happen. Del Potro, if he comes back, then hopefully there'll be enough players to stop Djokovic. But I would see Djokovic as potentially overtaking Nadal, maybe Federer.
I can't see anyone beating Djokovic at Wimbledon or US if Djokovic is fully fit and Djokovic is basically firing, because there's no one who's as good on hard court. And what will be really interesting, as the other guys have said, is Roland Garros. I do believe Nadal will win, but if Djokovic can somehow beat him, then there's a huge kind of psychological victory for him. So he gets four Grand Slams in a row, and he also beats Nadal at what Nadal's best at. I'm not saying it will happen, I don't think it will happen, but I think Djokovic will have it make a huge effort to try and win Roland Garros, which is why I think it will be the most interesting tournament this year.
Hey, we're now going to discuss quite an interesting and controversial topic, one that might often be discussed in the pub, if you will. The greatest British sports person of all time. I am going to put this motion to the floor, if you will, that Andy Murray is the greatest British sports person of all time, and I will defend this cause to the bitter end. I feel like most of you are going to object. We'll start with Benji.
It's Frank Lampard. He's won the Champions League, Premier League. Okay, you know what, I need to think of more British people, but I think obviously Lampard has scored so many goals, and he was one of the most talented footballers of all time. But I know it's difficult because you're comparing a footballer to a tennis player, but I just think Lampard, he's very decorated. Not like English players haven't won the World Cup or the European Championship, but Lampard won all he could win, basically, at Chelsea.
So how do you say Lampard's the best British sportsman of all time and he's not even the best English midfielder of all time? That's something come on, Scholes, far more technically gifted. Gerrard, yes, a different position, but many arguments. No, let's talk about Lampard. But I think the footballer argument is always difficult. Obviously, it's a team game, and Murray is an individual. I think that title would always go to an individual. I put Bradley Wiggins was someone who popped to mind just because of his success in cycling. I think Murray has a very, very strong case. But another part of me also thinks it should be one of the rugby 2003 squad. So, I don't know.
I think it's very hard to say because all the sports are different. There's obviously the team sport or individual sport. I like Chris Hoy as well as Bradley Wiggins. There's loads of top cyclists in top British cyclists. And with Andy Murray, he's won a lot of Grand Slams, but he also could have won many more because he's been in a lot of finals. Whether if he won more Grand Slams, it would make him the greatest British sportsman, I don't know. I think I think a lot of tennis fans would just say, yeah, he's the greatest British sportsman, because they're a tennis fan, so they'd automatically think Murray, yes, definitely. But if you think of all the great sporting legends, then he's up there, but there's room for debate, definitely.
Well, my case for Murray is the fact that he's played in one of the most competitive eras of a sport of all time in terms of the quality of... He's had to play against Federer, Djokovic and Nadal. And he's been well number one for nearly a year, won two Olympic gold medals, won three Grand Slams, won about 50 ATP Tour titles, and then also won doubles titles as well. As Naomi mentioned earlier, won a mixed doubles silver in the Olympics. And I think those achievements surpass a lot of people. If I was comparing him with footballers, you talk about all these great midfielders. None of them did it for England. None of them got England anywhere at a World Cup or a Euro. So I think that automatically rules them out of contention because they weren't able to come together in a united team. But yeah, I think it's time we reflect a bit more on Murray's career as a whole to bring us back to more of a tennis-oriented aspect, considering this is a tennis podcast. So if we go back to the beginning, the first time I actually ever watched a tennis match was the 2012 Wimbledon final, when obviously Murray lost in four sets to Federer, famously cried afterwards. Do you think this was the moment that put him sort of in touch with the British public and people actually started liking him? Because he had his moments before then.
Yeah, because like... people generally felt sorry for him. Obviously, there was a massive crowd for Federer, because Federer is one of the most loved tennis players of all time. But yeah, maybe it was the moment, because people thought like Murray deserved the Grand Slam. Like he was just unlucky that the other big three were just incredible and winning all the other Grand Slams. So yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, I think that this was the point where many began to believe that Murray at one point would win Wimbledon, how close he was to Federer, and the raw passion of that interview afterwards, and obviously the emotion, you know, struck an emotional chord with the British people, and that was when, you know, Murray's popularity began to turn. And you know, he was beginning, if not had already proven he was an elite player by that point. And you know, who would the British public prefer to back and appreciate? Like Tim Henman. You know, Tim Henman was... we were talking about this earlier. Tim Henman, we were saying, is the most overrated person in tennis, let alone the fact that he's got a hill named after him.
Only got to the semi-final.
So, you know, Murray had to be back just because of his pure talent, and I think it was probably at that point where he began to get appreciated more.
I think the public really began to connect with Murray at that moment when he was crying for so long after that. Everybody saw what it meant to him. Like, he really wanted to win a Grand Slam. He wanted to win Wimbledon. And everyone, despite the Federer fans in the crowd and at home, everyone who was British as well, they wanted Murray because it meant a lot. And I think that's what inspired Murray to go on. When he lost to Federer, that's what inspired him to improve his game, and he knew how close he was. It was four sets in the Wimbledon final against the greatest player on grass of all time, so he knew how close he was, and he knew it wasn't going to stop him from becoming a better player and win Grand Slams and the Olympics in the future.
I think we can all safely agree that Murray's career is going to be looked at in a very, very positive sense indeed. Let's now turn our attention to the women's game and talk a bit more about the women's side of the Australian Open. So obviously, if you missed it, Naomi Osaka, the 21-year-old Japanese player, won the Australian Open in three sets against Petra Kvitova in the final, her second Grand Slam in a row, after she defeated Serena Williams at Flushing Meadows to win the US Open in September of last year. An incident that caused some controversy there, with Serena Williams questioning the umpire. I'm sure you all saw that. Osaka finally broke free of that to win her maiden, not main Grand Slam, to win her second Grand Slam. Can Naomi Osaka be the new dominant force in women's tennis? What do you guys think?
I certainly think she has the ability. Yeah, and it was great to see her, as you said, win the Australian Open. Like, after her like US Open was victory was marred by controversy and the fans booing her. I don't know whether it was at her, but like, anyway, it was controversial and she was upset. But now she's, I guess she was elated after the Australian Open victory and was able to enjoy the victory. Women's tennis hasn't really been consistent. Different winners have come up, although with the exception of Williams, who's won 23 Grand Slams, which is incredible. But other women have like won Grand Slams and then just drop down the rankings. So it's a big question of Naomi Osaka and whether she can enjoy more Grand Slam victories in the coming years.
I think Naomi Osaka will definitely enjoy a few more Grand Slam victories, but again, she may be a victim of this kind of problem of women emerging and re-emerging in tennis and winning some Grand Slams and then disappearing off the face of the earth. However, I don't think she singularly will be the dominant force in tennis. I think there are a few who look slightly like they have more potential than the others. I think Sloane Stephens is a key example of someone with a lot of talent, and I think she could still go somewhere. I know she hasn't won the last few Grand Slams, but still won in 2017 and still very promising. I think I know Madison Keys hasn't won a Grand Slam yet, but again, like another American tennis player with a lot of potential. So I think Naomi Osaka has a lot of talent, and I think she will win quite a few more times, but I think there could be in a few years like a younger generation of kind of a big four with women, with maybe Sloane Stephens, potentially Kvitova, Naomi Osaka. And I rate Madison Keys a lot. I know she hasn't done much yet, but I still think she has a lot of potential.
I would like to see Naomi Osaka becoming a threat in women's tennis and being at the top, because it's been Serena Williams for so many years now, and it was with Sharapova as well for one stage of that until the drugs ban, and now Sharapova's back. We don't really know what's going to happen, whether she'll make it back to the top or not, but it's nice to see someone else break through and win two Grand Slams back to back. Although some women have come up and down, I'm not sure when the last one won two Grand Slams back to back besides Serena at some point, but I think it's incredible, and I hope she can maintain this high level of tennis, and it'll be very interesting to see if she can.
It will indeed. I think one characteristic that's common of all those women there is that they're all extremely hard hitters. I mean, Kvitova actually was recorded as having an average forehand speed that was faster than that of Djokovic's at one point in her career, I think, which shows you just how hard they hit the ball. And I think that is one thing. Obviously, Serena Williams is renowned for her power. I think in a women's game, to be successful, you do need genuine power. I mean, if you look at a player like Radwanska, who's recently retired, she did have some success, but didn't have the power to take her through to the next level, winning a Grand Slam. And talking of power and talking of Serena Williams, do you guys think Serena Williams has the potential to win another Grand Slam?
Yeah, she certainly does, because her serve is incredible, her play is incredible. She has 23 Grand Slams, and I think the record is 24 with Margaret Court. So I would want her to see Serena break that, because that would be incredible. But I still think even if she doesn't win another Grand Slam, she'd still go down as greatest, as we're discussing that players have improved tremendously in the last 10-20 years, and Serena Williams would certainly be greater than Margaret Court or Steffi Graf and etc.
I think if both are able to compete consistently this year, there could be an interesting dynamic between Serena Williams and Petra Kvitova. I don't think Naomi Osaka will win another Grand Slam this year. I think the fact that she's won Australia is already a huge achievement. I don't know how successful she'll be in France or Wimbledon. But Kvitova's 28. She's come back from this injury, as you were saying, Matt, a very hard hitter and a very competitive player. And Serena Williams is always a threat. She can never be disregarded, even at the age of 36. So I could see maybe a final between those two, and between two real hard hitters. That could be an absolutely fascinating match.
I think if Serena Williams can win a Grand Slam being 8 weeks pregnant, then I don't see what's going to stop her in the future. Her age and ability, it's fine. Although she's 36, she's still at the top of her game. She's getting far in the tournaments, and whatever the Grand Slam is, whatever the surface, you know that Serena Williams is going to be a threat. She's done it before, she's experienced, she's still got the best serve in the women's game. She's still fast, she's still powerful. There's nothing, she's still determined, and that's the key thing. She gives it 100%. She doesn't want to give up, otherwise she already would have, despite having children. She's in it because she actually wants to win, and I definitely think she's going to win more Grand Slams.
Certainly appears that it could be a very distinct possibility that she will win more Grand Slams soon. Something that really sort of summarises our thoughts on women's tennis thus far. One thing that has caused controversy recently in the world of tennis is Bernard Tomic, who is apparently deliberately trying to damage Australia's Davis Cup team culture, Tennis Australia have said, and they've withdrawn all of his financial support. And last month, Tomic accused team captain Nathan Hewitt of ruining the national tennis system against him after Hewitt alleged he had threatened him and his family. So, what do you guys, first of all, I'll come on to some other questions later on, but what do you make of all this sort of furore about the about this about this Tomic incident?
Yeah, I think when people heard the story, they probably assumed it was Kyrgios as well. But, you know, I think Tomic has an equally bad temperament. Like, when I've watched him play, there was an incident a couple of years ago where he asked his own father to leave the court or something. So there's clearly a lot of instability in his life. And he went on, something I found out today, he went on Australia's version of I'm a Celebrity while he was still playing, which is still pretty rare and strange. The comments to Leighton Hewitt, I think, are unacceptable. Hewitt's still, obviously, like, his victory, I think he got one or two Grand Slams, but that makes him a great in Australian tennis, and Bernard Tomic is simply not a player of that level. His greatest Grand Slam feat is a quarter final at Wimbledon. You know, that's nothing, and he's not even a particularly satisfying player to watch at all. So I think it's very disrespectful on Bernard Tomic's part. I think it was in very poor taste, and yeah, Australian Tennis Federation completely right to withdraw the sport.
I just don't really understand what Tomic is trying to achieve by behaving like this. Like, it's not going to help the country. He needs more fans, and he's not going to get more fans by causing controversy with the Australian Davis Cup team. It's just not helping anyone. It's not good for him. It's not good for Hewitt. It's just more drama. It's just unnecessary drama that's not needed in the sport in Australia.
Exactly. I second these opinions, because, like, I think Tomic is being completely unreasonable, and if, like, he's insecure about things, shouldn't say them, because Hewitt's great with Australian tennis, and there's no reason for this.
By causing hassle like this, it's only going to ruin his own career, so he's not doing anyone any favours.
Touching on a point here, Australian tennis in recent time has produced, I think it's fair to say, some characters. We look at Kyrgios, Tomic, also Tansai Kokkinakis. Do you think that there is a sort of systemic problem in the culture of Australian tennis that means that they produce more volatile players who are more likely to be, shall we say, aggravating on the court? Do you think there's something in the culture there, or is it just an unfortunate coincidence?
Well, obviously both Tomic and Kyrgios do have bad temperaments, and then the argument could be made that it's simply a coincidence, but at that level, that kind of behaviour needs to be stamped out. I mean, Tomic has pretty much always been like this. I mean, his anger issues got worse, I think, from 2016 onwards, but Kyrgios has never had a good temperament, and that is something really worrying. And it would be so wasteful if Kyrgios basically wasted his career due to his own psych. I think that'd be really problematic, because, you know, Kyrgios is a far superior player to Tomic. You feel like he does have the ability to win a Grand Slam, but he doesn't have that commitment. So yeah, I think there is a deep-rooted problem in Australian tennis.
I like to think it's not the culture and it is a coincidence, because the fans are always really up for it, and whenever I go to Wimbledon and I see the Australian fans, they love it and they love supporting the players and the game, and at the Australian Open, the atmosphere is really great. But it's just a shame, with their best players, they're not up for it, and their mental attitude is just all wrong, and it's really a shame for them, because the fans are behind them and the fans want to enjoy it, but it makes it very difficult. So I hope it is a coincidence, but I don't know, because it's becoming more common. So
yeah, as Naomi said, I hope it is a coincidence, but I don't know personally whether it's endemic to Australian tennis culture to have players with temperament problems. But, well, it does seem the case, and it's a shame, because players like Kyrgios might be able to achieve Grand Slam victories even if they improve their temperament and they didn't become unmotivated after losing a point and smashing their racket, which is it's a shame to see, because it's disappointing the fans and the players themselves. So yeah,
I think the fundamental difference between Kyrgios and Tomic's players is the fact that Kyrgios, despite all his anger issues, is a fascinating player to watch, whilst Tomic has anger issues and isn't a good player to watch. So I don't see what joy you get out of watching Bernard Tomic, because, like, you're not going to progress far in any major tournaments. But Kyrgios, no top player would disregard Kyrgios, because he's such a dangerous asset and probably one of the best best at low percentage shots on the ATP tours. So yeah, I think even as a fan, yes, Kyrgios, he can throw points deliberately, but as a fan, human curiosity always beckons and you always want to see what Nick Kyrgios can do, and I hope that remains the same in the future.
It's certainly an interesting one. Just as we come towards the end of this podcast, we're just going to chat a little bit briefly about the Fed Cup, which is taking place in front of a home crowd for the first time in 26 years in Bath this weekend, with the 8-team Europe and Africa round robin event. So Great Britain have been stuck in a third tier of this women's tennis team competition since 1993 and have had playoff defeats in four of the past 8 years. Obviously, a few years ago, we saw the men's Davis Cup team win the Davis Cup, which was a fantastic achievement for Britain. Do you think that women's tennis in this country would be inspired to a greater degree if we had some success in the Fed Cup, or is the success of individual players like Jo Konta and Heather Watson more important?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both, really. I think Joanna Konta is a phenomenally talented player. I think she's probably the best player we've produced in the last 20 years, probably. And I think she does have the talent, maybe the leadership skills to drive the team to success, but the Fed Cup will never be seen in the same vein as Grand Slams. So it's just unfortunate because obviously it requires different skills, as it's more of a team game and requires more cohesion. But Joanna Konta driving the team to a Fed Cup victory will not be the same as Joanna Konta winning an individual Grand Slam, because that's not what the fans want. The fans want to see, you know, British players doing well in Roland Garros and doing well in Wimbledon. So as good as the Fed Cup is, I don't know how much of an achievement it would be.
Yeah, I completely agree with Alex, because individual victories are way more impressive, but obviously it would be great to see the team of Joanna Konta, Heather Watson win the Fed Cup. But yeah, that's what I think.
I think that Great Britain won a Davis Cup a few years ago, and Andy Murray also won Grand Slams, and I think the Grand Slam definitely was the one that made the country get more behind Britain and tennis in general. And I think the same could happen for women's if Konta were to win a Grand Slam. But the thing I think is that it's more likely for a Fed Cup victory than a Konta victory in a Grand Slam. I just don't think she's got the consistency and she's able to win a Grand Slam yet. And with the help of others against other countries, I think maybe that could be a starting point to build on, and then Konta can win Grand Slams, and then it will inspire the other players because they know they've all contributed to the victory together.
Thank you very much. Well, on that note, I think it's time to wrap up the first episode of Strawberries and Cream for 2019. I'd like to thank my guests today, Benji, Alex and Naomi, for joining me and giving me their thoughts on tennis. Hopefully we'll be back soon, but for now, thank you and goodbye.
This is URN Sport.